okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, we're playing Stacking Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's just from Matt Weber. SP Futures up 1250. NASDAQ Futures up 91.75. And Microsoft down 450, which is... 2% after they came out with earnings. They actually beat on top and bottom line last night, but their cloud is the Azure of many. Didn't grow as fast as people thought. So even though they're doing well in all their other monopolistic areas, that one didn't do as good, so the stock's down. Of course, the stock's been up like every single day, so I wouldn't exactly call that a massive problem. Do we have Mr. Lou?
We do.
I'm on.
How are you, buddy? What's the word?
The word is, Comet, what is it? Neowise is about to disappear from the skies. I've had a look at it out here. The viewing here is a little bit better than it is in Chicago because we're up higher and we don't have quite the sea of light at night that you guys do. But it was quite spectacular, and I don't know how much longer it's going to be visible. Not too much longer, but I would encourage people if they can get out a couple of hours after sunset and look to the northwest, you should be able to see it.
Well, cool. I gotta maybe think about doing that. I was just reading here this morning, going through the alleged deal they have on the new stimulus package, another $1 trillion, a whole bunch of money for colleges, whether they open or not, but. There's no agreement yet on the $600 a week, and there's no agreement yet on any further checks. So some people are getting money already, and we're not sure that... Why is it the individual people always seem to be the last ones? So just the way that is, I guess.
Let me talk about, if I could, just some numbers. I had the opportunity to watch a guy named Scott Atlas, who is a public health policy expert at Stanford.
Was he a descendant of Charles Atlas?
No, but it looks like he's in pretty good shape for an older guy. He has a couple of videos out that are worth linking to, but he had an extended interview with somebody at the Hoover Institution, which is also located at Stanford, about the economic impact and the life impact of the shutdown, and he noted, and I note as well, that you know we really haven't had anybody really talk about the impact in terms of health and in terms of life expectancy of prolonged periods of unemployment and prolonged periods of economic hardship for individuals. So he raises some numbers in this one of these interviews, and I just wanted to throw some of these numbers out because they're pretty interesting. So he notes that for every $10 to $24 million in lost income, not GDP, but lost income, equals one additional death. And he says you could pick your cause, whatever it is, depression, drug use, you know, suicide, whatever. But these numbers are fairly well established from previous economic depressions and recessions and what happens to our mortality rate over the course of these kinds of things. So that lost income, you know, relates to one additional death. He noted that there's a significant loss in terms of delayed or foregone medical treatment. And he noted, you know, this interview that he gave was at the end of May, and he said that there are roughly 650,000 people getting chemotherapy at any given time in the United States for cancer. That's people actively undergoing chemo. Well, half of those people aren't getting that over the course of the shutdown as it was being run by the end of May. So half of that population. 325,000 people no longer got, were no longer getting their chemotherapy as a result of the shutdown, either as a result of the hospital saying we're delaying it, or their fear of catching something in the hospital, or their inability to pay for it. He noted that as of the end of May, there had been their estimates, and again, he's cranking out algorithms that are based on previous recessions, so that's his model, and then on the death figures for COVID, and what they estimate based on total mortality, what they estimate are the lost life hours. So he said that by the time this interview was given, there were 800,000 lost years of life from the COVID infection. Okay, so as of the end of May, 800,000 lost years of life, and that's a function of, again, excess mortality, people dying early, people dying in advance of what their the actuarial tables would say their life expectancy would be. He said at the time of the interview, the shutdown was costing 700,000 lost years of life every month. So March, April, May, you had 700,000 lost years of life per month. So 2.1 million lost years of life at the end of May versus 800,000 lost years of life from COVID. Now, these are gross numbers, and again, they're based on statistical and actuarial averages. But this was the first time I had heard somebody actually sit down and make an effort to quantify. And this guy's numbers, again, I haven't seen his original paper, but the paper itself was published in The Hill, and that contains the links to the research that they've done. But when you start thinking about that kind of damage, the economic impact of income and income support and things like that start to loom pretty large. And of course, his comment, he goes on to comment in the interview that the same kind of things that we've been saying on the program for a couple of months, which is, look, in terms of herd immunity and reinfection rates and mortality rates and hospitalization rates, this thing is looking like every other viral infection we've ever had. Those numbers are going down.
Yep.
Now.
They're going down. They've been going down a little bit.
There should be a reopening quickly.
They've been going down a little bit by the day. But I will say to you two things, Lou. One is, by the way, that is the mirror image, the exact same argument you use for relatively high speed limits in non-enforcement of speed laws. The same thing. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong. I mean, it's correct in what he's doing. But the exact same argument, I mean, I think we all could figure out, and especially in today's cars, that if everybody drove 10 miles an hour and was incredibly enforced, you'd probably never have, well, never is a long time.
Oh, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
In fact, he makes this argument during the video. He said, look, we all know how to cut traffic. We accept a certain level of traffic mortality rates. We all know how to cut traffic mortality to zero. It's to restrict speed to 5 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And nobody dies from car crashes.
Although a few people did when cars only went 5 miles an hour, they managed to.
I would never underestimate the what is it Mencken's line or P.T. Barnum's line? You'll never go broke underestimating the gullibility of the American public.
Yeah, something. But so the idea is if everybody goes 70, that the time spent in traffic by an individual person is like an hour less a day or some crappy number. Or not a crappy number, or probably a real number. That if you put all those hours together and you figure, okay, you have 100,000 lives lost that you picked up by the hour a day of all the rest of the people, you've picked up 200,000 equivalent lives of time that you're saving, and that the 100,000 lives lost are worth it. That's the perverted logic.
Yeah, well, this is how public policy gets made.
Yeah,
you try to look at impact and say, okay, is the cure worse than the disease?
Right.
The disease is taking, it has taken 800,000 lost years of life at the end of May, but the cure has taken 2.1 million lost hours of life.
Right. What I'm saying is, but on one hand, people buy into it because they want to drive fast. And of course, they're bulletproof. They're never going to be the one that dies. On the other hand, I will say this, Lou, we've had a bunch of people on the show, and everybody who really looks at the numbers and sees where this is heading and where it's been since March, comes to pretty much the same conclusion, I think, that we do. Yet I will tell you this, we're not going to win this argument, Lou. We have no chance of winning this argument. I'm not talking about politicians. It is ingrained in everybody. They had this.
No. It's not ingrained in everybody. Had we had a rational, I think, thoughtful discussion of this at the senior leadership levels of the country, and I will say flat out that the president is incapable of holding this kind of a dialogue or performing this kind of a role, had we had this, I think we would see people moving in this direction. But what we've got is a constant fear-mongering because it generates advertising revenue and because it damages the president.
But
we've seen a constant fear-mongering on these issues and no credible response. I mean, the Scott Atlases are not getting their word out, but they should be.
By the way, I think
Lou's right.
Well, sure he is. He's right, but he's getting nowhere with it, because I have the same attitude.
Well, there's no doubt that you're fighting against a fire hose blowing you against a brick wall.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I'm saying if you walk into any even bar in Chicago, and you say, God, this guy in Arizona is an idiot for sending people back in after the thing's already out there and telling people to wear a mask. Lou, you're the only person in the place who believes that way. Everybody is buying this crap.
And again, I point to the lack of credible, thoughtful leadership. I mean, I would love to have a president who gets up on national television with a whiteboard and doesn't even take, not a press conference, but just gets up with a whiteboard and says, let's play some numbers here, and writes up on the whiteboard the numbers and the herd immunity threshold and discusses reinfection index. You know, he doesn't have to know this stuff in his heart of hearts. He just has to be capable of communicating it.
How about something really from our generation, Lou? And I know this makes me.
I can't even imagine that. It sounds so old school.
Maddie, you know who could do that? Bill Clinton could do that.
Yes, he could.
I don't think Obama could, and I don't think Bush the second could or Bush the first. But Bill Clinton could do that.
Well, you know, I was going to take this even one step older and further.
And that's, by the way, what any private company leadership would do.
Yeah, well, I would say
we do that every day.
How about this? The president puts together a 1,000-word essay on exactly what's happened, exactly what's moving, exactly what he's seeing, exactly what the numbers mean to him. And these are things that we've done. These are things that worked. These are things that didn't. And, oh, by the way, here's where we are today. And sign it, President of the United States. And put it on the front page of the, instead of all the BS one-liners back and forth between everybody interpreting everybody, just write down what
he's
you think.
He's not capable of doing that.
I understand that. That's not my point. Why not? What, Lincoln could
have. Yeah, our votes have consequences.
More importantly, he has, I think, and I'm not alone on the sort of center-right side of his thinkingness, he has, I think, virtually eliminated from his staff the people who are going to sit down with him and tell him, Mr. President, you need to do this, and you need to do it in this way. He is manifestly unprepared to be able to handle this in terms of his temperament and his style, and I would kill for him either recognizing that and giving it to somebody else or something like that. But there has yet to be in our public discourse, and Anthony Fauci is too badly compromised right now to do this, there has yet to be this kind of thoughtful messaging to the general public. I think most people want to get away from the masks, and they want the shutdown to end, but they don't have the intellectual justification for it. I think you could make that intellectual justification. I see these guys like Lou, like Atlas doing.
You are absolutely preaching to the choir. You're absolutely preaching to the choir. But I'm going to tell you, I'm very seldom do I ever disagree with you and say I'm right, because usually you are. What I'm saying is you are absolutely correct, but it doesn't matter. The big lie has carried the day. And we're the salmon. We're the salmon going the wrong way in the river. The big lie has carried the day.
I understand that. I'm not saying that I expect this to happen. I'm simply lamenting it.
Fortunately don't have to watch CNBC and Fox all day like I do for my clients. They had Alan Blinder on there yesterday, who I always thought was a blithering idiot as a Fed vice chair, whatever the hell he was. And he's on yesterday talking about COVID and what a horrendous job we've done in this country, and all the rest of the world has done this great job. It looked like some scene of self-flagellation out of the Middle Ages or something. Like we should all get some whips and start nailing ourselves with them or something. I mean, the dude who's on this, how we've done this horrendous, look at how New York did a spectacular job and now it's breaking out in California. It's breaking out, in Florida. It's breaking out in Florida because it got there later. Come on. I mean, the idea
anybody who says New York City did a spectacular job is lying.
What I'm saying is they don't, Arizona is how far from New York? It's damn near as far as London, for God's sake. I mean, it's not the same. I mean, it's the same country, but the idea that the same breakout of a germ has any connection. But he will say, I had this discussion, and Maddie knows the lady. She's with the bartender at the Tripoli Tap. Walk out and, something, I don't know how we even got going. I don't know, one of them might have listened to the show or whatever. And she says, Chief, we've done such a horrendous job compared to the other countries. And her name is Mona. I go, Mona, first of all, you don't know that. The numbers don't say that. And by the way, has anybody even looked at some of them? I said, the stuff that I read looks to me like every country, no matter what they did, sort of had the same reaction, same response. The thing went out there. It got to its 65-70% herd mentality. If you sent people home, it just got there faster, like in Italy or in China. And oh, by the way, the numbers you can't believe there, you can't believe here. And she says, oh, Chief, everybody knows it. I said, Mona, everybody doesn't know it. And I said, by the way, how many people do you think are infected in China? She goes, everybody knows that, 85,000. I go, 85,000? I'll take the over on 2 million. But look, I couldn't have talked her out of that $85,000. And you know what? I went home, I Googled China thing, and guess what popped up? 85,000. I mean, we're continuing to give bad numbers. I mean, this is not going to stop, Lou. I mean, you have convinced me. we cannot win this argument. Alan Blinder, he's a Federal Reserve Vice Chairman. He's on there talking about something he knows nothing about, and I don't pretend to be a doctor. All I pretend to be is read both sides of this. And the conclusions I'm having is that, by the way, for me, and I take precautions, not as much as other people think I should, but I take precautions. But I also know in my heart of hearts that if I get it today, I'm nowhere near as much in danger of dying as I was St. Patrick's Day, where I was pretty friggin' afraid. Right? And then what if I did get this? I'm 65.
Well, sure, because we know more.
We know more. So right now I figure it's not necessarily a death sentence unless you're over 85 or 80 or 75, somewhere in there, and I'm not there. So my point is we're getting incrementally better here. So, and I had a big to-do with Frank yesterday, and I got kind of gross on the poor guy, but I shouldn't have. He says, we need to have schools with 2 days, and we need to have distancing, and we need to have something. I said, Frank, here's what we need. I'm not saying that I'm God on this or anything. We need to open a school. Just open it, or two or three or four, because people will go, and teachers will teach. Maybe they already had it. Maybe they're younger. They don't care. We need somebody to say, how bad is it going to get? I said, if you open a school with social distancing, and I said, and every teacher had to wear an adult toy up his behind, that school's going to be okay because of the adult toy up his behind and because of the distancing. It may not have been that at all. I mean, we need to open one up legitimately with lunch, with recess, and find out how bad it is. And we may find out it's not bad at all, right? And that's what we need to do at some point.
It appears right now, based on the reinfection rates, that unless you've got a faculty that is quite senior, you don't really need to take very many precautions. The kids aren't going to get sick.
No.
And the younger adults aren't going to get sick. And the odds are, even as long as there's no serious underlying health conditions or immune compromised people doing the teaching, It looks like if anybody under the age of about 75 is almost certainly has some kind of a residual immunity from the last cold that they had. But again, we're at the point now where as you correctly noted, everybody's running around with their hair on fire because they're getting so much of their news from a media machine that is hyping this thing because it's like the blizzards.
Well,
How many blizzards actually hit Chicago? But if you watch the weather report over the course of a winter, there's like 25 of them coming.
Oh, yeah.
Because that increases the advertising. It increases the clicks.
Well, but Frank sent me a thing yesterday, and a very articulate guy. And it's all a question, as they say, Lou, of point of view, right? Whatever the subject, it's point of view. And there's this guy writing, before I say that, here's what I will say dogma, for me anyway, from one of the numbers side. You've got to get the money being paid for not doing your job out of this decision making process. Because if you don't, you're going to have every professor's signing a thing saying in the year 2025, I still want to get paid for being and be at home. You're never going to get the legitimate, because this guy writes the article and he's talking about just what you just said. Kids aren't going to get it. Okay, now this guy goes into the numbers. Okay, we're going to have 1 million kids go back to school, and even if the number is 0.01 something something percent or 0.0012%, that's 300 kids we're sacrificing. Now, who gets to sacrifice 300 kids just because somebody says the number is that low? And whose 300 kids are they? What if it's yours? You know what?
I have horrible news for you. You know what the diphtheria, rubella, DMT, DMPT shot that we give infants?
Yeah.
When we're young children early on, that kills or maims or injures a couple of thousand kids every year.
I understand.
Just by the nature of the vaccine.
Lou, my point is we've reached the point here where you can't inject facts into this argument. The argument is, we got a loser, bud. Except with me and the listeners. I'm not giving you grief. I'm just saying I've been arguing this.
You know what's going to happen, Chief. You know right away. The first 8-year-old who has a susceptibility to this thing that gets sick and dies, which will be a tragedy,
yep,
is going to be blown up on every major news channel. But, here it is. They started back. And they killed somebody.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
And your response is going to be, okay, well, over here, I got 700,000 lost light years a month.
That doesn't go anywhere near as far
as... On and on and on.
If you got a picture of them wheeling the body into Lurie Children's, your numbers... Lou, I'm with you. But I'm saying,
You remember, Chief, when we talked about this back in March, I said... The thing that's driving the politicians right now is Italy. They want to avoid the pictures that they got from Italy of the bodies stacked in the hallways, of people dying in parking lots because they couldn't get into overcrowded hospitals. That's what they want to avoid. Well, that's changed. We're no longer trying to avoid that. Now, nobody knows what we're trying to avoid. And again, this points to a lack of leadership on the part of the president and his people to get somebody to stand up and say, okay, here's where we are and here's what we've got to do. And again, I point this lack of leadership at the feds, although the governors have done a crappy job on it as well. By the way, how's your governor doing on this stuff?
He's a buffoon.
I haven't heard much from the big guy. Of course, he's right in the sweet spot
he's everywhere. But Lou,
vulnerability.
But this is all underreported. What I'm saying is, right now we have people waiting in line for hours to get their tests in Florida. Okay, so we're getting these tests, and people are given 100-some thousand tests a day. What do these people do to spend their whole life in line? But I mean, I've yet to see a story in New York or in Chicago in a blue collar neighborhood. Here, I would say the worst was probably Hispanic neighborhoods because they have zero voice. I mean, the blacks, even though they say they don't, they have some voice. The Hispanics have none, nor do they really want one. they're happy to just work and hang home. But if you were to go do a sample, a random sample of, you know, the guys I know here from the building and stuff and do some work at my place. If you were to take a random sample of 400 houses around where my buddy lives over in, by Midway there, which is mostly Hispanic, not all, some white, some black, and go into a random test on 25 of those houses, you would probably find that in April and May, or March and April, when you sent everybody home, that virtually every one of those houses, or a big percentage of them, the COVID ran through the house, the guy might have been hospitalized, wife probably not much problem, kids probably never knew they had. You would find out that all the stuff you're finding out in Florida, how it's working through the population, worked through in Illinois, in Chicago, and in New York, it was just behind closed doors, nobody counted it, nobody cares about those people. I mean, it is absolutely the, we'll talk about this more after break. It has to do with the news, the people in the news are often the same class of people. They only care about themselves. That's all they report on. That's all they report on. I mean, we'll talk about when we come back. SP Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 69. We'll have some more, we'll come back, we'll have some earnings stuff, and more from Lou.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Just so you know, Mr. Weber and Lou, Manny, I don't know if you did this to me or somebody did. Somebody's got me tied into this coronavirus kind of clearinghouse for, like, doctors and stuff. So today they get the thing, how type 1 interferon deficiency hints at a severe form of COVID-19. If you don't have a level of protein IFN-A2, Manny, if you have that decay just before a severe infection, it'll now become life-threatening. Did you know that?
I don't even know what that is.
Neither do I. Here I can show you the chart. There's this massive chart of all these proteins you're supposed to have. Some kind of an interferon one. There's actually a test for this particular protein. And the guy says, will that help in a hospital? The guy goes, nah, no hospital can test for that. Okay. So to say that there's stuff flying around about this is an understatement. Anyway, SP Futures up. How is that for a piece of information? Anyway, S&P Futures were up 1150. NASDAQ Futures, we are up 75. Dow's up 102. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 68.5%. FTSE up 36.6%. CAC around up 23.5%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 0.58%. Shanghai down 8, call that flat. Hang Seng up 205.8. The Hang Seng and Shanghai have been going, like, one goes up one day, the other one goes up the next, and down. It's kind of an odd deal they've got going. 10-year, 0.59, they are not budget anywhere. Bund, minus 0.48. Japan, positive 0.01. I feel like a broken record every morning with that one. Oil, down 11 cents, 41.79. Brent down 17 cents, 44.12. Natural gas, up a penny at 169. RBOB, 128. Gold's up 1360 to 1878. Silver's actually down 11 cents. Wow. At 2302. This is going to be in my book. If I had a book, this would be my book. Why were you long silver and gold for 5 years and it couldn't move anywhere? And all of a sudden in 2 days it moved all you thought it was going to move in 5 years. But that's the way it happened. This is fifth day in a row on U.S. China. I think there was a liquidator someplace in the gold that kept it down, and I don't know who it was. But anyway, we've got an earnings. We've got Microsoft. It's still down. It's only down 331. It was down 455 a little while ago. So they beat on top and bottom line, but still, people didn't like the idea. We got telephone up 29 cents. Tesla, which was up 100 and some last night, is up 45. Stock's trading 1638, and I think I saw from my Dr. J feed unusual option activity. I think I saw, I forget which week, somebody bought a boatload of the 2,000 calls and paid like $160 for them or something. 400 hours out of the money. And I don't think those are worth squat this morning, but I guess it was a shot. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no delays, issues, accidents to speak of on any of the area expressways or even off the expressways. So off to a great start here on a Thursday morning if you're heading into downtown. Weather today, it's one of those perfect summer days today. Partly cloudy skies, mild temperatures, low humidity, a high of 77. Right now it is partly cloudy and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, much needed rain in the forecast down in the Valley of the Sun today, and a high of 99 with a good chance of showers, which they need down there desperately. Right now it's mostly clear and 91 going up to a rainy high of 99. In sports, the Cubs and White Sox wrapped up their exhibition season last night. The Cubs topped the Twins 4-3. White Sox lost to the Brewers 5-3. They're both off today in preparation for their opening day, which is tomorrow. Major League Baseball's opening day is today. There is a doubleheader tonight to get the 60-game season started. It'll be the Yankees at the Nationals, the opening game of the season tonight, and then followed by the Giants at the Dodgers in a rivalry game. And then the rest of the league opens tomorrow. The Cubs will host the Milwaukee Brewers at 6 p.m. Central Time. Kyle Hendricks will be the opening day starter for the Cubs. White Sox will host the Twins at 7 p.m. Central Time. Lucas Giolito will be the opening day starter for the Sox. And then the Diamondbacks will be at San Diego, and that's an 8:10 p.m. Central Time first pitch from San Diego. Madison Bumgarner, the newly acquired former San Francisco Giants pitcher, will take the bump for the Diamondbacks. Looking forward to baseball. Chief.
The real quick before we get into our other discussion, in the last week or two, there seems to be tremendous confirmation. This is scary, sort of. And again, like a broken record. Of course, nobody knows what a record is anymore. But the study in Indiana, the study in Germany, all predicted that actually 10 to 11 times as many people have had the disease than the numbers lead you to believe. And now those numbers seem to be even expanding, and some people think that in somewhere between Christmas and April 1st, when people didn't even know what they were treating, if you look at the doctor's visits and the people that had unknown virus, it wasn't the flu of the year, that there might have been 7 million people there. So anyway, this week somebody from the Washington came out and said it might be as many as 20 times. Okay, so let's say instead of the $2 million case number they put out there, that it's really 30 to 40 million. Lou, that's a boatload of people. I mean, that's a big boatload of people. Why exactly aren't those people back to work? Why aren't those people at the Cub game? Why aren't those people going to school? As this goes by, it could be as many as 50 million in 2 months.
The short answer it should be, and in fact, we've lost track of the original narrative, which was to avoid overwhelming the healthcare system. It doesn't look like that's going to happen now, based on the falling hospitalization and falling mortality rates. Not total numbers, because we're getting more people, infected, but rates are falling, and so those things should be reopened. I mean, the goal now should be to get to a herd immunity as quickly as possible, so that everything can come back to some kind of stable normal, a new normal. But we're not doing that, and we won't do that. But I honestly think we are not going to see the scaremongering stuff stop until November 3rd at the earliest, and that's just my opinion.
I would agree. This is my prediction. God, I hope I'm wrong, Will, but I have a feeling I'm right. That one of these days, whoever wins, it'll probably be easier if Biden wins, because people don't believe anything Trump says now. But even though I'm no fan of Biden, because I don't like where the Democratic Party's going, but what's going to happen is somebody's going to come up with a vaccine. By the way, Lou, did you happen to listen yesterday? I don't know the full details of it, but this could be a new low with how big firms get involved in something. The U.S. government signed a contract today with two of the biggest firms to manufacture and distribute the vaccine for like billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Yet, you know what, Lou? They don't have a vaccine. And even if it's somebody else's vaccine, I think they're going to be able to produce it and market it. What the hell is that all about? What if you and I come up with one? We got to give it to these guys for production and distribution.
I don't know exactly how that works, but there are provisions in our public health law. I saw this with the anthrax vaccine that provide for exactly that. This is utilizing private industry, but it's also creating, as you noted, kind of a monster in terms of market effect, but that's a viable option under U.S. public health law, and it's designed for exactly this circumstance.
Why don't you and I get a huge contract with money up front to distribute a anti-arthritis for old people drug, even though there isn't one?
Well, if there was something. If we were looking at the moral panic that this thing has caused, that COVID has caused, and in the arthritis arena, maybe we could, if we could lobby effectively.
Here's my.
I mean, that was the story when I keep coming back to this, because this was my experience. When I was involved in the anthrax vaccination program, the ins and outs of that program and the interweaving of government agencies with a private manufacturer looked positively incestuous, and that continues today. By the way, I wanted to make a note real quick. A report out of the UK, and I saw this on BBC World, indicates that the virus has mutated into a slightly contagious version, although not any more serious in terms of hospitalizations or anything else.
It's been around for about 10 weeks.
It looks like the reports today are that there appears to be a more contagious version that is now popping up and has now dominated the spread of the disease worldwide.
That's at least 10 weeks old.
The initial reports are 10 weeks old. We're 10 weeks old. But the report this morning is that it's now gone worldwide.
Well, that's what happened.
It's now comprising the majority of the cases that are surfacing.
That's why the one that came out of Europe originally was more infectious than the one on the West Coast.
One that came out of Europe originally was the direct infection from Wuhan because of Italy.
But the mutation happened in Europe, and it happened in, like, March. And what it did was, as a matter of fact, the Italian doctor is convinced that it made it more contagious but less deadly. But this is the weirdest thing. For anybody who's seen these weirdo pictures of this virus, all these little thingies that stick out of it.
Spikes.
Those are the spikes that actually attach to your cells. And what this mutation did was made one of the spikes actually like sharper or rougher or something. So it made it more likely to attach to a cell.
This goes to your protein.
Yeah.
Discussion.
Right.
And the protein surface of the connector on the virus altered. I don't think there's any question that the version that hit Italy, which was the version that came directly from China, was likely more deadly when it hit Italy.
Well, they also they didn't know how to treat it. They put everybody on a ventilator and killed them. And they had a bunch of old people in the houses. They got blindsided by all the old people that got sick. But you know, here are two things. The one,
and their healthcare system got overwhelmed.
Well, but I don't understand. As you know, I was as I watch all these people, a lot of them African American, trying to, not that really makes any difference, pulling down a Columbus statue, and I think virtually everybody there, white or black, if you gave them a test on who Columbus is, they wouldn't even know. Now, if it turns out that Nike is involved in child and slave labor, do I get to tear down the Michael Jordan statue because all the money he made from Nike?
I mean, if in fact we're going to reach back to past sins, there are a number of statues that ought to be pulled down, including, and I say this advisedly based on the stuff that came out within the last 5 years, that of Dr. King.
Sure.
How far do we go with this?
That's right. How far do we go?
How come we're not? I mean, if we're interested in histories of slavery, how come there haven't been attacks on mosques, for heaven's sakes?
Yeah.
Or other churches. I mean, it's a highly selective, I think, specifically anti-American or anti-Western culture kind of protest. That attack on the Columbus statue, the reports where they were throwing frozen bottles of water at the cops?
Is
that correct?
Oh, yeah, and firecrackers, too. And, you know, blowing stuff up.
That's some premeditated stuff right there.
Lou, it's all premeditated. But anyway, let's stick on the other subject for a sec, because if you can't, like I said, I'm stuck watching this. Not stuck. This is what I've chosen to do this for people. And by the way, I'm very happy for my people because we did pretty well with this week with our gold and silver stuff. But Lou, where I'm going is, we have, if you listen to the CNBC, and these guys are pretty good. I mean, Dr. J's on there, Pete's on there. People actually, I know what I like on there. But you get this, talk about a herd mentality. You end up talking about all the news as it affects you. And unless you really, really try to where when the janitor from the building comes up, and I cook breakfast every morning because we can't go out for anything, there's nobody down here cooking, so we have a kid, so I cook breakfast, he comes up. Lou, I can't wait to find out what's going on in his neighborhood, about his friends. I mean, to me, it's a big deal to know how everybody's doing except in addition to me, because it very seldom is what happens to the person on CNBC making $1 million a year for doing God knows what and having some big place in New York with a 2,500 square foot apartment living with maybe just his wife or girlfriend. The world is different to him than the people they jammed home in Brooklyn, right? In April. But they don't seem to pick up on it. I mean, right now, the numbers that you were talking about earlier, lives lost and these kinds of things, or quality of life, look, the unemployment rate for people under 40,000, I mean, they're making less than 40,000 a year, is 40%. And we're going to talk about 30,000 businesses in Chicago being going down.
Yeah.
These are people that'll never get that business again. In this package, if Chief and Lou and Maddie Weber put all our money together and we put it into, you know, something XYZ, Hot Dog Inc., okay, and we invested $100,000 a piece in Hot Dog Inc., okay, and we have like regular jobs and so forth. Now, and this thing just, because of this, is just toast. Our $100,000 a piece is just gone. But now that's stock in a company, right? That's a capital loss. We can't even deduct our $100,000 from our other income. We can do 3,000 a year. We're never going to be in a business again. We're not only lost one business, we're never going to get into another one, because if we can't deduct it, at least get, we paid for the damn thing on after tax money, right? And now we can't deduct it against our other income.
Yeah,
I mean, this is insanity. So I mean, the idea that anybody actually gives a rat's behind about these people, all they do is talk about, is insane. I mean, if you put me and you and Carl and Kevin and the gangs that we have, and the rest of the people here, even bring Frank with us, I mean, there's no doubt that our tone would be so much different than what you see in this national. Because all they.
Well, and this, again, this goes back to my point. This stuff should be articulated by the leadership. The president pushes to reopen. And this is why he's pushing to reopen. Because his people are telling him, these businesses aren't coming back. The longer this goes on, the more these small businesses, the things that keep people employed, the things that keep people off the streets, the things that keep people from killing themselves or turning to drugs, this stuff is not coming back the longer we run with this lockdown. But nobody, you know, again, the White House is not articulating this, and I don't know why. Well, yes, I do know why.
Yeah, they're not capable. They're not capable. I mean, neither is Jay and neither is Lori. They're in the job because it's a popularity contest now. What do you think if next time around, we go for, doesn't look like it's gonna happen this time, we go for Mark Cuban or Oprah or somebody like that? Well, we're in the same spot.
I've only been following the horrific gun news out of and murder and shooting news out of Chicago. I haven't followed a lot more. I know that the president, the Trump administration is increasing federal officers in Chicago. What is Lightfoot saying about the crime and the fact that there are going to be federal law enforcement officers on the streets?
Nothing.
Is he trying to cooperate on this, or is he just screaming about
it? The point, Lou, is if they come in, now the way to handle this, okay, in my opinion, and I think you'll agree, but who the hell knows, maybe you won't. In my opinion, you're not supposed to send, like, soldiers into the streets. Maybe that's, you know, you're not, that's, I think
in,
it's...
In short answer, you can't send soldiers into the streets.
Right, so...
It's illegal.
Right. It's illegal. So now, that doesn't mean that in an embattled city like Chicago, the right way to do this, if people had some intelligence, I think, is for the president to say, what's going on there? And for the mayor to come back and say, look, we've got 1,000 policemen in administrative duties. Could you possibly give us access to federal forensics labs, send some of those people out here to help for a while? If you have any guys that don't know how to do drone stuff, whatever it is, that we can specifically look at 3 or 4 areas that we could use federal help, I think she should request that, and it should be granted. Not this fight back and forth, and not the people being wung in vans in Portland and stuff, where he, you know, I don't think either side knows. If you're
well,
the
Portland,
guy coming
I
here.
I thought Portland's different. Portland, you've got 50 days, 50 straight days of rioting and attacks on public, federal buildings, that the local mayor has said, we're not using police to protect us.
Right. Like, okay, but
that's a little
what I'm saying is, whatever it is, there should be a huge articulation, like you said. What are we doing? And in this world of communication, there's no communication. And we also have a city here that has more cameras than any other city but London, and London's got five times as many people, and yet we can't arrest anybody.
What is Lightfoot's justification for saying, I don't want federal help? She's losing control of the city. Her cops came in there.
This is horrible to say, Blue, but she came in there with zero plan. And the idea was, now that we have, I think she felt, now that we have a mayor that's, you know, whatever, felt that she could somehow, talk to the people in the hood, maybe because she's black. I don't think she's dumb enough to think that. But there's somehow or another she felt she could somehow appeal to this through personality. It's the police's fault, so she went out and hired a black guy who seems pretty bright. But boy, talking about a guy with a deer in the headlights, what did I get myself into? Lou,
is any of this coming down on Kim Fox? She's not prosecuting anybody anything for a while.
Lou, it's right where you know where Greg lives. He lives near North, or River North, and he's got a nice. He doesn't have a 1% or place, but he's got a nice condo, and he's had it for a long time. Well, a block away from his, there are million some dollar buildings, and on his corner, they're putting this building up that is going to be the highest, allegedly the highest per square foot condo ever sold in Chicago. Lou, they had 5 shootings within 2,000 yards at a front door last weekend. We're talking about shootings of people downtown. All the bars are closing at midnight. There's no clubs. There's no nothing. And people are shooting each other out of cars at 3 in the morning downtown. And what the hell is going on? How do you not have 15 squad cars? The minute one car opens up, you level the thing with a machine gun and throw the bodies out. I mean, you can't let that happen. I mean, you know I'm not a...
How much of this stuff is coming down on your state attorney? Because my understanding is Kim Fox has just basically said, we're not prosecuting this thing or shoplifting, and I'm letting people go. I'm going to basically empty the jails. And this has got to be blown back on her.
Well, you're not going to believe this. Whenever I have this discussion with people, I just send them to heyjackass.com. They keep track. 85% of the murders don't even have, there's not even a suspect.
Yeah.
So it's not Kim Flack. She's not getting anybody to try. Yesterday, or was it the day before, Maddie? Another new low. 14 or 15 people shot at a funeral.
I saw that.
But if you look at you look at every one of these things, it's not like, God, this Lou guy, I can't stand him, and he, you know, you're a rival gang, and I go target you like you see on TV. You know, you see that in Chicago PD or something. But, Lou, if you go down the list is every single time.
Ironic.
There's three or four or five people shot every single time.
The same thing is happening in New York, and the same thing is happening in Denver. The same thing is happening in Baltimore. The same thing is happening in Philadelphia. The same thing is happening in Washington. And Seattle, and L.A. All of these urban areas with very progressive leadership are just seeing this huge spike as they take this anti-police position. And guess what? This is the outgrowth. I don't think you had to be some sociologist to say, you know what, if you de-emphasize, defund, and deactivate police units, you're going to get a rise in crime in these areas.
You also could, Lou, take the other side, which is my side. When I say my side, everything comes down to numbers. You take people out of work for 5 months that are economically kind of deprived in the first place, and you shut down the schools. What do you think is going to happen after 5 months?
If nobody's working, nobody's going to school. Militate in favor of increased police presence. And again, my understanding is that in a number of black and Hispanic neighborhoods, they have gone forward to these mayors and said, I know in Minneapolis this happened, saying, what are you doing defunding? We need more police, not less.
Well, but it's down to not even, how's this for a dumb thing to say? It's not even murder for cause, Lou. If you go through, I go through every Monday morning, I go through a little bit on the show, every the addresses and the times where all the shootings are, you'll see 109th and Trip, 5 people. Somewhere else, 4 people. 3 people. You just see where people are. If you don't like somebody in a group, you open the thing up on the whole family and the whole friends. You know, and the shooters, I think, are getting younger and younger. Half of them are probably 17. And there'll be 50 shots fired and 2 people hit. They don't care who they hit.
You, You've got gangs, as I understand it, you've got at least one gang and maybe several of 10 to 14-year-olds carjacking people.
Yeah.
I just read that story.
And I mean, somewhere along the line, you got it. But, I mean, I don't see, we only have a minute here, but, Lou, I don't see how. Last night we had a couple of beers with some people who are traders, but traders are pretty well read on this stuff. They're going, Chief, how the hell, if all of a sudden all the places in Chicago that are rental, everybody goes back to the suburbs, and the condos, if we take a 40% hit on values in Chicago, both commercial and down, this is the biggest phenomenon the city's ever seen, people moving downtown. If you reverse that and take a 40%, Lou, how do we come back from that? How do the banks come back from that? How does anybody come back from that?
Yeah, and I mean, the failure to maintain civil order is the failure of the most fundamental obligation of government.
Absolutely.
And if you can't do that, you lose everything. It's one that push, that domino goes over. You got dominoes falling everywhere.
Well, I tell you what, I've heard you know, buildings that have stopped construction, the ones that are rental, they're just saying screw that. Come November 1st, if we don't have these businesses open up down here, the flee back to the suburbs. Audrey, the last four people that have called are looking for a house and leaving the city. Just get me out of here. My rent's up. Get me a house in the suburbs.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean the trade off for living in a place like Chicago with its high cost of living has always been the culture, the shopping, the restaurants, etc. If again, civil order goes, if the perception of civil order goes, there's not, the trade off suddenly goes to zero.
Absolutely,
there's no benefit in exchange for the high taxes and the high cost of living.
No. Lou, thank you very much, buddy. Talk at you next week. SP Futures only up 8 now. We're down a little bit. NASDAQ Futures up 67. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janias.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here. Well, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hall. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. I'm digging up your Teslas in a second because I want to find out how much money Dan made on his trade last night. S&P futures up 950. NASDAQ futures up 73. Let me see if I got the last numbers in here. 1650. The straddle went out at $230. And the stock's up 47. I'm saying Dan sold that thing 100 times because he's a big guy. And, now he just made $205 100 times and he's buying breakfast. Not really, huh?
Well,
what? Go ahead, man.
So, our style is more, high yield bonds, corporate bonds, and small and micro cap stocks. And some of our names have done extremely well recently. There's been a risk on trade this past week. So we've seen, in a couple cases, we've seen 50%. In one case, we've seen 100% rise in a couple of the names that we purchased recently. Good tone to the market has really helped. Certainly a lot of the good news that's coming on the vaccine front and a lot of the optimism there. And just from my point of view, a lot of the focus, so much focus is put on resolving this issue, and that I think has certainly helped the markets and has helped with the risk on trade. The other thing that is definitely helping the markets is obviously the liquidity. And knowing that we have the support for additional liquidity, there's talk about extension of some of the unemployment benefits, and it's very likely that we're going to see something, I think, that is going to be positive and good for the markets. We're in a good period. We're in a good period for risk on trading, and despite a lot of the news we see recently, I think in our markets, we see a lot of positive things happening and a lot of good momentum.
Dan, how do you strip away? I mean, I've been very impressed, as I've said 100 times, and I'll say 101, with how you've managed to be able to dig through what I consider the mess of the news here and find places that have done pretty well. I mean, on the stock side, I've had a little more trouble. Actually, not trouble because I'm in the indexes, okay? So those have moved pretty well. But the narrowness of the movement on the stock side has been a challenge to everybody who managed money. I mean, we're talking about five stocks, being, 80% of the rise? I mean, people who don't want to be in those stocks want the same return. Well, duh. The median stock in the market's down 9% this year? I mean,
right.
like nobody knows that. But you appear to be up on all the news, and that's just where, you're in your fixed income world. When you look at just this week, we're only Thursday, for God's sake, and on Monday, we came piling in with $850 billion out of the European Union. I hope you caught the part. By the way, are you going to make it to 2058? You think?
I hope so.
I don't think it's in the cards for me, but I hope so. The people in Europe have promised to pay all their debt back by 2058. I want to be around to say I took the over on that. It's not all paid off. I'm just saying. I don't know if you saw that, but how do you? I mean, and now we're talking $1 trillion out of our guys on Friday, which will be next week. I mean, we're talking $1 trillion a week. How do you tear away, shall we say, the nominal from the real? I mean, and how, I mean, you when you say you've gotten some places last week, you mentioned some bonds that seem to me to be pretty darn good. They're not, I don't think they're junk. I think they're investment grade, and they're trading 6%. I mean, should those bonds be, because of there is some risk there, shouldn't they be like 9 or 10 and not 6? I mean, I, you know what I'm saying? I mean, even you have to be a little bit reserved, even though I think you're confident that you're finding the pearls among the clams, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. On the bond side, there's, you know, we do all our own homework too, and so we're, you know, it's all about cash flow. It's all about paying your interest and principal. Less about growth, less about headline news, more about cash flow. So when we look at companies, we're investing generally in shorter term bonds and generally in companies that have the cash and have the focus, even more importantly, on free cash flow. So I had mentioned Southwestern Energy. A month or two ago, we were buying the bonds at 8%. Now we're trying to buy them at 6. We have bought some at 6, but the offered side is closer to 4.5 now. And they're, this is a company, it's natural gas. They're extremely well managed. They're higher quality in the high yield space, if you will. But they have the cash. They have their cash flow is strong. It's predictable. So while we could have a worst case scenario again, I think we've already had the worst case scenario. I think we're coming out from that in the energy sector, and I think we only can see better times ahead in terms of more demand coming globally. I think the question is really when it happens, not if it's going to happen, but just when it happens, and the sooner we get over the virus, I think the sooner we're going to see better times.
I'm with you. I absolutely am with you. If I were to say that where would I likely to put my people in a fixed income, I'm going to say natural gas for a company that's got the scratch and seems like they have cash flow would be probably out of my top 10 I could possibly pick that's easily in there. So you've done all the right things, yet how comfortable are you that even all the right things? I mean, it looks to me like we could screw up heaven lately. I mean, is that being too? I look at Chicago, and if this downtown area goes, and all of a sudden there's a 40% hit on these buildings down here, and everybody's renting goes back to the suburbs home, I don't know. I would say the last person to be hurt would be the natural gas company, but still, there's going to be a lot of corpses in the road.
Yeah, and I think there's a distinction here between what I would refer to as Main Street and, say, Wall Street. And when we talk about, for example, small cap companies or small businesses, I mean, I'm a small business owner. My sister, who is an attorney, is a small business owner. My friend who runs a construction business is a small business owner. When we're all moving along in this environment. But then when you think of Main Street, you think of restaurants and nail salons and hair salons and barbershops and all that, and a lot of those businesses being under pressure, there seems to be this gap between those businesses and, say, for example, some of the big tech names that have just, really done well in this environment, and some of the consumer names that have done well in this environment. So that split, I think, is there's almost, although we're seeing it a lot in the media, I think the investing public has to realize that at some point, those people who are struggling with small businesses are going to impact our overall economy unless the proper measures are taken or unless we're able to get through this pandemic quickly. So right now, I think we're in good shape in terms of having an administration that knows those are going to be the goals to get reelection. So I think all of that stuff's in place, and that does give me some confidence. There's always uncertainty, but those of us who've lived through, the SNL crisis in the late 80s and the long-term capital and the peso crisis and certainly 2008, I think we are trained. I was in the markets and working in 1987, so I think we have been through tough times in the past, and in the past we've seen long workouts afterwards. We've seen it take many years to get back to where we were before. It's very likely that this workout, although it could get worse, but the time period, I think, is going to be shorter because the time period kept coming in was so fast. There was an acceleration on the downside. It happened in energy as well on one day, on a Sunday back in March, where we saw a 32% decline within a matter of seconds in oil prices, and then we saw a price war. And not that it's going to come back quite that quickly, but I think we are going to see more of a V-shape than at this extent, you know, this extended period. And what needs to come together again, going back to the Main Street and the Wall Street, if you will, I think there needs to be some convergence of the two as time goes on, because that right now, that gap, I think, could be the thing that creates some problems or creates at least some uncertainty. I'm hoping that everybody's considering keeping money in their retirement plans, and I think that's a way to get through this tough period, and it's one of the best. I have a lot of small business owners as clients, and I've helped a lot of small businesses save money in taxes by creating retirement plans and offering them to their employees. There's a huge benefit to having that nest egg, if you will, and you know, there are ways, again, I think if we stay positive and we look at the momentum that we're in right now, continuing the positive momentum in the markets, hopefully that's going to help everybody as time goes on.
Well, I think it will too. I just, my concern is I can't strip away. I mean, I don't think you're quite as old as me, but I mean, I grew up in the inflation era. Matter of fact, that was my job at Pullman. I did all the inflation adjustments for the unions and the vendors and the sure. contracts and all that stuff. So I mean, when I hear people talk about it on TV that are 35, I sit there and go, they have no idea what they're talking about because they weren't there. I mean, it was really a rough time for a lot of people. Other people, not so bad. I mean, in your industry, for God's sake, the regular people got inflation rate was 12 and they were getting 14 at the bank, right? So they weren't right. If you had money, it didn't even affect you. Matter of fact, you stayed ahead of it. And if you had a house, the house appreciated. So, this is not a slam on anybody. If you're a union worker, you did okay. I was a salaried guy, and every year I got the maximum raise of 5% and the inflation was 12. How was I doing? not so hot. You know, my concern, Dan, is it always, it's uneven. And when you start, in those days, people would say stuff like, it wasn't a Home Depot, but if there would have been, they would say, sales last year were up, 10%, adjusted for inflation, we really were down 2%. And I don't see sort of any of that infrastructure. So when the Fed sends all these people a $600 check, every week for 6 weeks, there's some, and then we say, hey, retail sales are up 1%, things are going good. No, they're not. I don't like ever being confused, and I'm real confused about where we are here.
I definitely share your feeling there. I am absolutely confused as well, and seeing things that don't necessarily make sense. And at various levels, I mean, the restaurant manager that lost his or her job, who's worked hard, should absolutely be collecting. I have some friends that are retired and working part-time at Home Depot and talking about other, them having trouble getting people to come back because they're making twice as much money with the unemployment. So there has to, there's definitely some disparity going on here. I do understand the union background. My first client when I was at Loomis as an institutional fixed income portfolio manager were the Teamsters. That was their retirement plan, the national group out of D.C. And I spent a couple of years later in life working as the investment director for ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association. And, certainly the environment in a union is quite different than it is elsewhere. ALPA was a fantastic organization to work for, helping the pilots who had gotten, had gone through this really difficult period after 9/11 with losing their pension plans. A lot of them were frozen and all that, and I think helping those guys out creating new defined contribution plans and making sure we have the best investments in those plans. But you're right, it does affect, this environment does affect everyone differently. And it's, I think it's hard to get a one plan that affects all, and hopefully we're going to have some solution by the end of next week that's going to at least be helping the majority of people and giving people, what's more important, giving people hope. I think that's what we really need is a little more optimism. And people looking, as you had started out the conversation, for the silver linings or the things that are working well. And there certainly are plenty of things working well. One of the stocks that we had purchased recently, it was a company I had met at a conference earlier this year, Lincoln Educational, LINC, ticker symbol. And it's their Lincoln Tech is a vocational school. It's a private vocational school that has focuses on HVAC and automotive mechanics and medical assisting and LPNs. Initially, when we went into this environment, students were leaving. They couldn't work. They couldn't attend class at the campuses. Well, now they're all coming back now that they've lost jobs, and they're coming back to get an education in some of these trades, and in some of the areas that are going to continue to be prosperous. You still need your car repaired. LPNs, medical assistance, is going to be very much in high demand going forward. So again, looking at those areas of the economy and the trends in the economy that are very favorable, we had started purchasing this stock at $3 and a handle. And it was trading yesterday in the sixes.
Wow.
So almost a double just from about a month and a half ago. So these are the names that, this is where the homework, and this is where the looking for, keeping that optimistic attitude and seeing where, a lot of these students that are going back to school for these trades are going to do quite well. And I think the demand for this type of education is great. And the company's on a growth path right now, all this happening.
Do those guys
are a little tougher, but now there's a growth path.
Do those guys, they ever partner up? I'm assuming it's some sort of a for-profit school, I'm not saying that in a bad way. Do they ever partner up with, like, the junior colleges of people?
It's actually an interesting trend. The when we spoke about that, and the community colleges have become sort of stepping stones for a four-year degree, because the exorbitant rates of tuition for the four-year colleges, it's created this new environment for a lot of community colleges. So they're now considered sort of the first 2 years, if you will, of a four-year degree for many students, and for a lot of smart students who are trying to save money, you can get a really good education at many of these colleges. So Lincoln, for example, doesn't compete directly with these community colleges the way it may have been, 3 or 5 years ago. So today we're in a quite different environment, and they've really, they've created a niche that doesn't have a whole lot of competition. For that school in particular, you can do about half your work online, and what they do that I think is tremendous is they offer this, like, internship where you actually go in, to the car dealership or the service center if you're doing auto mechanics and you actually have a job. And right now, today, we still need to repair cars, so regardless of the current environment we're in. And then also on the other side, the medical side, with, nurse LPNs, I mean, being able to get training in a hospital right now is probably a fantastic experience. So the on-the-job training is part of the curriculum there, and about half of it can be done online. So they're managing quite well in this environment.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if you listen to the show, but my guest 2 days a week and friend for too longer than I need to know, or anybody needs to know, Kevin O'Neill is now he's been a teacher, and now he's a dean at this, I always forget the name of the place, but it's a Northeast Indiana community college. But they're not, I know what you're talking about, like DuPage Junior College here. They try and have people like do the Illinois engineering degree, so at the end of 2 years, those kids can go right to Illinois and kind of pile right into the Illinois program. So you're right, but now with Kevin's school, I don't. They might have some of that, but they have really launched into this. since Indiana, northeast Indiana, is in southwest Michigan, is into this, northwest Indiana, southwest Michigan. That's where all these people are moving with warehouses and supply chain management. So they're doing a lot of stuff in certificates and degrees in just that. And I was just wondering, boy, it sure seems like I've never heard them say they do anything regarding automobiles and other stuff. It almost seems like there's kind of a match there. I mean, I don't know if there ever would be kind of a public-private match there, but it intuitively to me says, gee, I bet they'd love to offer some of those classes too. And I bet the price isn't much different.
They are. And on top of automotive, Lincoln, does HVAC, which is, again, always going to be in high demand, regardless of whether you're buying a new house or maintaining an old house. They also offer degrees for electricians. So I think the trades are a really good alternative for a lot of, younger people who are trying to figure out what to do in this environment, and they're generally good pay, good paying jobs.
Well, plus, to me, I never could get, as you can imagine, I have people on the show that are always arguing about, why should you go to school and get an economics degree? Then I say, well, that's what I did.
Okay. Exactly, yeah.
But the cost of that, I don't understand why a plumber can't be a smart guy and have a sociology degree, or a smart lady, and why somebody who thinks he's so smart and has 5 degrees doesn't know how to put a switch in a house. I come from a blue collar area. Why should you know just one and not the other? I would love if there was a place around here. I used to be a halfway decent electrician, but I haven't done it in 30 years. If I could go take a class and get current, I'd do it tomorrow.
No, I totally agree. I think some of that, because I don't know if it was like this when you were growing up, but when I was growing up, we had vocational schools.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So you had a choice of going to if you were going to go to the public school in your town, or to go to the vocational school that maybe served 4 or 5 towns surrounding. And it wasn't that unusual. And that sort of the trend of the vocational school has gone away. And a lot of, you see some HVAC business, like some schools that have opened up specifically for HVAC, or specifically for, online, nursing degrees, which I don't totally understand, but I think the trend had moved towards, sort of away from the trades. What I've been thinking in terms of sort of helping revamp some of the educational system is to offer some trade, a little more trade back to the schools. And as you know, especially being in Chicago, budgets were cut in schools, and the first thing to go might have been the wood working shops and your shop class and those trades that I think are important for kids to be exposed to at a young age to see if they have an interest or an aptitude. I also believe, being in our business, that there should be a finance class offered, and a little more in even, I went to Catholic school, and I remember, in the 8th grade, the nun teaching us how to balance a checkbook, and that's something that was, a very practical, commonsensical thing to learn at an early age, and I think those types of skills are good to develop in school and should be added to the curriculum.
It's interesting that we got on this subject because my mom obviously went to school during a depression. She said they never assumed you learned anything at home. They taught you everything.
Yes.
How to cut your toenails, how to cut your how to wash your face, your hygiene, everything. And then they never assumed you were going to help with the homework. You did the homework in class. And she goes, because you got a kid for 6 hours, that's a lot of time. You should be able to do it. Because when you went home, they were helping the parents out in the store or whatever. They weren't going to be studying at home. But
right.
It is interesting, but there's no difference between, putting together a something in your wood shop, putting together a railroad car, or putting together a computer program. You got to envision what you want, figure out how to get there, but take all the steps in the meantime, plan it out, and then do it, right?
Absolutely.
It's no different than what you do. I want to find the best bonds and the best stuff for my people, and you sig yourself and your guys on it, and you work hard, you get there. This is not...
Absolutely.
There's no magic bullet here. I don't think somebody calls you up once a week like Deep Throat and points you at a bond. I'm sure you'd love to have that, but I don't have it. I don't think you do either. I got a question for you.
A lot of it comes from experience, too. I mean, I think over the years, you develop a lot of contacts. You also know what to look for and what not to look for. And we're in an information-driven industry, even from the very beginning, my very beginnings in the industry in the mid-'80s, you know, just having back then, it was an inbox that was filled with research reports and being bombarded by the press. And I think knowing how to sift through that and find value. The other thing that's very important in our industry, and I had a speaker once when I was teaching, I brought in a speaker who was an international equity manager talking to some students at UT Austin where I was teaching part-time, and he said, just common sense. He goes, just think as, you know, you have to pay attention to what's going on around you and use your common sense. And I think, you know, that's what ends up making a good investor, you know, being patient and disciplined and all that's important, but also being able to use common sense and be in tune and be aware of what's going on around you and what, you know, where the need is and how people are responding. So as much as a lot of people don't believe that, you know, people don't want to listen to the news today, I think it's very important to keep up on what's going on and what people are thinking and who's viewing this and what are they seeing. And that's very important as an investor to get an appreciation for how the investing public, where they're going to be focused at any given time.
Well, I would absolutely agree with you. The only thing I think we might have a slight disagreement, we have a second here, and it's good radio, and we'll talk about it more next week, is I think things are maybe a little more fragile than you are. Maybe just because I'm in Chicago and you're not. I'm guessing that's the only difference of our point of view. Here it looks to me like the whole place could fall. I sure hope I'm wrong, but I tell you what.
I hope things improve there. I really do. It's although the case numbers here in Florida have been extremely high, we don't see it necessarily day to day. You know, we have options, say, where we want to go to the grocery store. We have options of what to do, but we are not seeing the protests and the crime and all that, down here, you know, the political demonstrations. We're not seeing that, so we're a little bit immune from that part of the thing, but I do hope things improve there.
I'll bet you next week when we talk about Florida that, to me, you guys are getting to the numbers and the everybody else turns down. I bet next week your numbers are a lot better.
I think so. Absolutely. I think so.
Take care of yourself, buddy. Well, we can't wait till next week because we have more stuff to talk about, and I want to get into more exactly what you guys do and who your clients are and stuff. I think the listeners will be interested in that. SP Futures up 850, NASDAQ Futures up 71. Be right back, Mr. David Andelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures now up 350. They were up more earlier. NASDAQ futures up 58. We got the Dow up 62. Again, Microsoft is down 350. It was down a little more than that. We've got Tesla, which is also settling down some here. It's only up 66, which is... Let me get this straight, man. They made 218. So 218 times 4. It's what? Say 8. It would be nice to say 9. So 9 goes into 1658, like Jethro Bodine from Beverly Hillbillies goes into, what is that, about 180. Well, that's a lot, you think?
That is a lot.
Just saying, you know, I'm not making any investment things, I'm just saying it sounds like a lot. DAX up 37.3%, FTSE up 26.4%, CAC around up 11.2%, so bullish, but mild over in Europe. Nikkei down 132.6%, Shanghai down 8.2%, Hang Seng up 205.8% as they seem to go a different way than Shanghai every day now. Not sure why that is. Bonds, again, going down in yield here, 0.58. The Bund minus 0.48, and Japan positive 0.01, so not much change there. Just as a way of review, yesterday the Dow was up 165, S&P's up 18, NASDAQ up 25. We've got oil down 25 cents to 41.65, Brent down 23 cents, 44.06, natural gas up a penny, 1.69, RBOB gas 127, it's pretty much been there plus or minus a penny or two for a while now, so energy price has been pretty steady. Gold up $9, 18.74, silver down 32 cents over 22.82, copper 2.92. Anybody got for us traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Off to a very good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looking at the map, Chief, nothing significant to report on any of the area expressways at this hour, which is pretty good for a Thursday morning at 7:30 local time. We do have a situation on the north side on Howard between Ashland and Palina is closed due to police activity. Apparently a shooting investigation.
Oh, come on. Somebody wasn't shooting anybody out of a car, were they?
It doesn't say, but Howard between Ashland and Palina is closed. It is not affecting the red line trains, but it is an issue up in Rogers Park.
Andy, why aren't we bullet salesmen?
Well, that's an interesting thought.
I mean, we'd be doing better. than anything, for God's sake.
You're right about that. We do have an issue that just came across here, though, on I-80 near Joliet on the westbound side, just before exit 132. Some emergency road work is now blocking the two left lanes. Apparently a pothole that desperately needs patching and is causing major issues. So traffic is building on the westbound I-80 near Joliet. That's exit 132 due to a pothole blocking the two left lanes. So keep that in mind. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a perfect weather day. Partly cloudy, low humidity, a high of 77. Right now it is mostly clear and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today and a high of 99. Right now it's mostly clear and 92. In sports, Cubs and White Sox wrapped up their exhibition seasons last night. Cubs topped the Twins 4-3. White Sox lost to the Brewers 5-3. They're off today, and then they begin the 2020 60-game sprint on Friday. Cubs hosting Milwaukee at 6 p.m. White Sox hosting the Twins at 7 p.m. The Diamondbacks begin their season as well at San Diego. That's an 8:10 Central Time first pitch, 6:10 local. Those teams all start on Friday, but the Major League season actually begins today because there's two games today. Yankees at the Nationals and then the Giants at the Dodgers, so you can have real meaningful baseball as soon as tonight and then the local teams beginning tomorrow. Chief.
What's the finale in Toronto? Where they playing?
Pittsburgh.
Really?
They're playing all of their games in Pittsburgh except for two series where they're at the Nationals and they'll be the home team. But play in Washington Stadium, and then there's one other game, I think, at the Yankees, where they'll be the home team playing at the Yankee Stadium.
So they didn't go to the Field of Dream, or not the Field of Dream, the natural spot in Buffalo?
Nope, playing at Pittsburgh Pirates Park.
You know, they got a real nice stadium.
PNC, yeah.
They got a real nice stadium in Toledo, the Mud Hens, too. It's brand new downtown. There's, you know, I'm surprised they picked Pittsburgh. So the team is going to hunker down in Pittsburgh. David, how are you?
I'm fine.
What did you think of... I'm sitting here looking at the unusual activity. All of a sudden, the entire world is on this silver, David. Yesterday, somebody bought 37,000 of the October 24-29 call spreads. 37,000. Now, here's something I've been long for 4 years, and every time I capped to 18, it was like the commercial where the guys started whacking it with the clubs. Now that thing, and then somebody bought like 20 minutes later. The August 22 calls, just bought 12,000 of those outright.
Jesus. I would be pretty cautious. And with all due respect to unusual options activity, and I think in general, especially when you get size like that and buying at the offer, you know, that's definitely a good sign. But I'm looking at the futures because they tend to lead. And overnight, the September front month future hit 23.67, broke $1.03. I mean, you're breaking over 4% in a night, went to 22.64, now rally 25 cents. But if you would close substantially lower, and by substantially lower, I'd say at least 30 cents lower for the day, you'd have a possibility of a key reversal. And when is it a reversal? It's a reversal when it is. And that's not to sound facetious, but if there would be downside follow through, you really wouldn't know. I looked at this before I got on. There's a spot 21.68 to 21.73 around yesterday's low in the September future and the previous day's high. So you wouldn't know that it's a top unless you got below that. So maybe this is just whatever, digesting the gains and consolidating a little bit. But I would not be aggressive. When something makes a new high, breaks 4.5% overnight, then rallies 30 cents. Lower close today and one tomorrow, if capital I, capital F, if that happens, would not be good. On the other hand, I can take the bullish standpoint. It's cousin copper. I mean, low was $1.99 and change in the September front month, rallied over a dollar, which is huge. It typically means economic recovery. And copper is still a little bit higher today. But I would be cautious. When you get the whole crowd, you know, as well as I do, they're all leaning that side. And, I mean, they've been touting it on CNBC, SLV, and PAAS, and this and this. And they've been right, you know. And I'm not long, I'm not short, but I would be cautious.
The only thing I would say is I since I have some people that have a lot of it, one of the places where I'm managing money, and I did finally buy some puts on the silver yesterday for everybody, and we rolled all our other ones up. So
you had the relative strength index measure of momentum hit 88.9 at yesterday's close. Anything over 75 is considered quote unquote overbought. Not my term. I don't like it. Extended. And the stochastics hit 93.2 and 90.7. Well, so if nothing else, you can see by the momentum indicators, everybody is in.
Well, as usual, David, there's the opposite ends of the magnet. On the one hand, for somebody who's been along the thing forever and have it never move, this is a lot fast. I mean, I'm with you on that big time. But I'll tell you this, if all of a sudden the inflation that the two of us have talked about for as long as you and I have been on this show together, it's been a long time. If it starts to break out, it's not going to be a two-month phenomenon.
No, I get it, but how is silver a hedge against inflation?
Whether it is or it isn't doesn't matter. If people think it is, then it is.
I mean, I can see a case for gold. I can see a case even for platinum. Silver and copper are 90-95% industrial metals.
Let's not confuse... people's perception.
It's not considered a precious metal.
Let's not confuse facts with people's perceptions.
Okay. I like it.
I mean, if let's put it this way. There's a certain amount of silver in the world. If we double the amount of money in the world, we're going to double the price of silver. The nominal price of silver. It's just the way it is.
You would know more about this than I do.
Well, I mean, this is interesting, David. When I ask people that are very bright, and I sure put you in that category. If I say I'm going to give you a 50% stock dividend in Microsoft, and it's trading 200, say, it's trading 208, you're going to tell me where's the price of Microsoft going to go?
Oh.
No, if I give you a 50% tax stock dividend. Not a split, but 50%. Let's put it this way. Let's make it easy. We're going to split the stock. Where's the price go?
In half.
Okay. Now, if I were to say, I'm going to give you a stock dividend on your dollars in your pocket, where's the price of Microsoft go?
Stock dividend in my pocket. If you're going to hand out extra shares?
No, if I'm going to, every dollar bill you have, I'll give you a $2 bill. I'm going to double the money supply.
Okay, well, that's inflation.
Okay, that means, but I'm saying people don't necessarily have on the tip of their tongue the other side of that equation.
No, I know, and it should be. I mean, if gold is, pushing 1900, threatening all-time highs, and the market smells inflation, which they should, not just with money supply, but all this flotation of debt, shouldn't the market, the stock market, the S&P, the Dow, not maybe so much the NASDAQ, but S&P and Dow, discount that and be lower in price?
No. That's the weird part of it.
All asset values would be inflated.
Would be inflated.
And inflation doesn't matter.
Right. Well, the problem comes then if the inflation runs to a spot to where now your fixed income, where people, I'll use the term, wise up and don't give $1,000 to somebody, and at the end of the year, get $1,000 in one back when there's been a 5% inflation. The formula that's been screwed up this whole time, David, is your interest rate is supposed to be the real interest, which has been, pretty much the same through the eons of time, should be 2.5-3% would be the real interest rate. I mean, if you could clone a caveman, he'd say if I lent Matty Weber 100 stones, at the end of the year I want 102 back or 103. Right?
Right.
So it's the real rate of interest plus the inflation. Because if I lend you $1,000 at the end of the year, $1,000 is only worth 900. Well, I want that 100 back plus the 3%. But that equation has been screwed up by the central banks now for well over a decade. Okay. Because if you look at the inflation, even you and I say, let's be nice and say the inflation's been 3-4% a year, if you count hospitalization, that stuff in there, which they don't, properly. If you count that in there, we've really had a negative interest rate for over a decade.
Right.
Which, and people are very used to that. And they don't quite understand it, but they're used to it. I mean, anybody who puts a less than $5,000 in a bank, now I know you're going to tell me that you have a local bank, and I do down here as well, that if you have less than $5,000 in there, don't charge any money. But I'm saying the big guys generally do now, or it's $3,000 or whatever. Most people have had, when I say most people, a lot of Americans, most accounts have been had negative interest rates now for years, and they don't even realize it.
Right.
So we're there, right, in the negative part. And, you know, I mean, so it's, but my, you know, when will this pop out and somebody say, all it's going to take, you've seen the rapidity of which all this has happened in gold and silver in the last 2 weeks. We've seen what happened with the COVID. If you get 48 swinging idiots on TV talking about inflation next week, all of a sudden everybody's going to expect it. Everybody knew it was coming. Everybody's an expert. The only two people talking about it in the last 10 years have been you and me.
What, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah.
I did a 10-year comparison of, you know, crude oil and tobacco and spaghetti and, you know, whatever. And, you know, when they were telling us it was, you know, 1.8% inflation, a real basket of goods, I calculated at about close to 5.
Yeah. Now, Dave, I want you to talk a little bit. I want to talk about what we just had a guest, Dan Janulis, and he's spectacular. I really like him. And he takes a different view somewhat than me, because I'm looking out the window here at a city that's falling apart. So I understand that's clouding my thinking. And I hope Maddie will say that I at least try and draw out other people's opinions, because things maybe aren't so bad other places. And but Dan is convinced that we're going to come out of this somewhat okay, and that underneath the covers, for lack of a better term, their firm has been able to find decent oil companies, actually natural gas companies, that are paying 5.5%, 6%, 5% on bonds that are, you know, they were 20 years, now there's 3 years left. He thinks that stuff is still out there, and they're finding it, David. They're finding some stocks that they like, especially some of this educational area with the, you know, the online stuff. And a lot of these companies are doing, I think there is, you know, I think there still is some stuff to find here. I mean, I'm surprised. I think you'd have to be really, really know what you're doing to find a bond paying 5 or 6% where you're confident in the company. I mean, I think that would be a nugget you'd want to find. But those guys seem like they're finding them. And, I mean, we don't do a lot of that here, you know, digging out. We don't have that big of a fixed income group. But do you think that, you know, you think that stuff's still there, David?
I mean, like, there was one last night. In full disclosure, I don't own a share. I'm not short a share. I tend to stay away from regional banks, so I have very little, maybe a few ETFs, but nothing in this particular one. And I'm not recommending it, but it was interesting. They had the CEO, president of First Horizon, symbol FHN, on Cramer last night. And it was very interesting. You know, they're expanding. Their loan demand is a little bit blunted by COVID or whatever, but their loan loss provisions have actually shrunk. They're expanding, you know, with a second headquarters in Nashville. They got big stakes in Louisiana and most of the southern states. And, I mean, you look at the stock, it's done absolutely nothing. You know, dead sideways between about $8.50 and $11.50. Yesterday's closed $9.30, so right in the middle. And PE is 10, 9.99 to be exact. Price to book is 0.62. With a dividend yield of 6.46. And the guy swears up and down, and he seems like a straight shooter. You never know. He seems like a straight shooter. He said their provision to cover the dividend is superb. No threat whatsoever.
Yeah, but how the hell... So, I mean, I'm going to say, first of all, without even not seeing the guy, you saw him, I'm going to say he's 100% straight, and he's absolutely right. How the hell does a regional bank... I mean, I just... saw somebody here in Chicago give a construction loan on a guy for this huge high rise condominiums and hotel downtown. We need another hotel down here, like we need, you know, another eyeball or something. I mean how does a regional bank not have some exposure to real commercial and other real estate in their area, and how do they not have some exposure commercial? I mean, the other stuff is probably run through the government, but how do you not have, and last night I was listening to all these casinos and all these places in Vegas. They're opening up, and guess what they found out, David? Nobody wants to go. There's no shows. There's no booze. Everybody's wearing a mask. It's no fun.
No, I get it. And I worried about the same thing, and that's why I said I don't think I have regional banks as a 0.5% in my portfolio.
How does a regional, and I'm not saying they didn't. My hat's off to them. How does a regional bank dodge commercial real estate? I mean, that's kind of what they do, isn't it? I mean, or how does a
regional... They do a lot of auto loans and the like. And he said real estate loans for residential are skyrocketing just because of, you know, and they keep a lot of them in-house. They don't farm them out to Fannie Mae and whatever. And he said that, you know, yeah, he admitted, he said, demand, you know, special commercial real estate and whatever is down, and you know they've put away loss provisions and whatever, but he said the demand for auto loans and residential loans are outpacing and that they're in good shape. I wouldn't know one way or the other.
I will say this
chart, the stock looks sideways, the dividend is attractive, the price of the book is really low. Maybe that's a spot. I'm going to look at it. I don't know that I would put $1 in it.
I'm going to say that right now, with all the amount of refinancings and so forth, if you process a lot of mortgages, I think you're doing pretty well. I'll say this unequivocally, anybody who hangs on to mortgage loans at 3.25%, he's got to be out of his mind. Why would you ever do that when you see inflation coming down the road?
I don't know the answer. I guess if they can borrow from the Fed and, you know, get protection there and throw it out at 3.25 or 3.5, they're playing the spread and maybe they don't see the inflation.
Well, you know, I actually called up, I mean, Robin, she's been on the show a few times, Robin Spitali. She was my partner in real estate business years and years ago when we were used to remodel places, and I was digging through some research for the show and researching how quickly the Fed raised interest rates. And there was one time where they raised them like 4 or 5% over a 4-month period, and or maybe even more than that. It was like 2% rise followed by 1.5%. It was unbelievable, David. And so I called Robin up with a date, and I go, "Isn't this the type we owed the condo up on Brompton?" And she goes, "It sounds like it. We got a bridge loan, David, at 8.5%, because Robin was a big shot at Pullman, and she knew everybody at Continental Bank. So we didn't have to get a mortgage, right?
Right.
So we got a loan that was, you know, half over prime, which is pretty damn good for, you know, a couple people in a home remodeling business. But we both had good jobs, and we guaranteed. It wasn't like, you know, we were schmucks. And Robin was a assistant treasurer at a place, for God's sake. So, you know, she was making good dough. But so we signed for it. And in 6 months, David, or 5 months before we sold it, our loan went from 8.5 to 14.
Wow.
And we ended up, I sold the place, luckily, at like exactly where I thought we would sell it. My budget, back when I really used to care about numbers like that, was like spot on. We didn't make a dime because we ended up spending so much more in covering the place. But I was never so happy to get out of something in my life. If it had been another year at 14%, I mean, where the hell would we recovered that? So this idea that, you know, and savings and loans, there were so many of them around, David. I mean, Evergreen Savings, there was Bell's Savings, there were all these places. They're paying more, for years and years, the mortgage rate was 6%, the passbook rate was 3.25, and the 275 paid for the building, the parking lot, the people in there, nobody made $1 billion, the CEO paid for sponsoring little league team jerseys. And that was the world in the 50s and 60s, right? And even most of the 70s. All of a sudden, these guys are paying 12% on passbook. So let me get this straight. You're paying 12% and you're earning 6. Why do you think they all went under? So anybody
that
right now...
That doesn't sound like a good business to me.
So anybody right now, and I don't know, this gentleman probably knows more about his business than I do. Anybody right now who's going to hang on to a 30-year mortgage at 3.25... thinking you're never going to have to pay interest on a checking account again, boy, oh boy, that's a long 30-year stretch. I'm going to say somewhere in that 30 years, you're going to be paying 5% interest, and I'll take that bet.
Yeah, I don't know. He sounded, I mean, and I wouldn't say he was overly bullish. He was cautious. He said, look, second wave, if we have to close down, especially in the South where he's
concentrate, whatever. He says, I got, you know, he didn't say the words, but he was nervous. That said, at the same time he was nervous, he breathed this, a certain amount of confidence. You know, that you're not going to start scaling in New Orleans and Nashville if you don't have a certain confidence in your business.
The bet right now, David, is some sort of a vaccine, whether it works or not, by the end of the year, and everybody's riding that horse. And I sure hope they're right.
But it's all factored in the price.
Yeah.
Well. And I don't have a lot of shorts on. But, you know, I mentioned right. Apple. I mean,
all right, Dave, we gotta save that to Monday. We're out of time. We gotta save that to Monday, bud. SP Futures down 1.25 and Nasdaq up 44. So not much happening. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.